Is this a preparation for the Trump meeting with Kim Jong-un and the inter-Korean summit?
A high-level North Korean delegation visits China. It's Wednesday, March 28th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're on Facebook right now at VOA Asia. Also ahead, China unveils its new voice. Musical instruments thousands of years old go on display. Germ-killing plastic. It's all on today's VOA Asia. A high-level North Korean delegation has made a brief visit to Beijing. Kim Jong-un met with Chinese officials in the capital. News media reported that a train believed to be carrying the North Korean delegation departed Beijing Tuesday afternoon amid tight security in the city. Speculation about the identity of the North Korean visitor began building Monday after video footage from Japanese TV caught images of an older green train arriving in Beijing. A visit by the North Korean leader, his first outside his country since coming to power in 2011, would have broad diplomatic significance. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with Bonnie Glazer, senior advisor for Asia and the director of the China Power Project at CSIS, the Center for Strategic and International Studies here in Washington.
There's more questions so far than headlines. One, of course, is who really initiated this meeting? Is it that the North Koreans have reached out to China or China reached out to the North Koreans? And then, of course, what was discussed? Is this a preparation for the Trump meeting with Kim Jong-un and the inter-Korean summit? But my guess is that not much of the details are going to be leaked out. But I doubt that they will say very much, except for the fact that this is, of course, part of the relationship between China and North Korea, and that they continue to have friendly relations between the two countries.
Which has not been the case, as reported of late, correct?
I think that the Chinese have reached out to North Korea and tried to improve relations. I think say there's been a standing invitation to Kim Jong-un to come to China and that he's not wanted to come. Don't know whether that is in fact true. But the Chinese are fearful of being marginalized from this whole process of change on the Korean Peninsula. They want to have a seat at the table. They want to make sure the Chinese interests are both protected and advanced. And the notion that there would be an inter-Korean summit, a U.S.-North Korean summit, the possibility of a trilateral summit without China being at the table and being able to weigh in and promote its interests, I think is a problem for China. So it does not surprise me that at this particular juncture they would want to reach out to Kim Jong-un if indeed they were the one that made the overture.
If China was to become part of it, almost going back to the six-party situation, but not quite obviously, what do you think the scenario would be if China becomes a part of this?
Well, I think that the Chinese would, in fact, like to revive the six-party talks. If there is to be a Trump-Kim Jong-un meeting, I think the optimal outcome for China would be essentially the resumption of the six-party talks taking place in Beijing with China at the table, trying to promote successful diplomacy, getting back on the track to the 2005 six-party talks agreement. But that means a return to the denuclearization goal, in addition to an action for action prescription of how to improve relationship between the U.S. and North Korea. And I think it's the jury is out as to whether or not North Korea is going to return to denuclearization. We have heard this from the South Korean envoy who went to North Korea, but let's remember that there has been no statement from Pyongyang, stating that there is, in fact, a return to the commitment to denuclearization.
What do you think the North Korean reaction to China's attempt to go back into the group, into the negotiations, would be?
Well, North Korea has not wanted China to be involved in the negotiations. They have suggested that they don't see China's role as particularly helpful. But the fact that Kim or some very senior official from North Korea was just in China does suggest that the North Koreans think that China has a role to play. And indeed, the role that the North Koreans probably want China to play is the role of helping to ease the sanctions on North Korea.
Bonnie Glaser is Senior Advisor for Asia and the Director of the China Power Project at CSIS, the Center for Strategic and International Studies here in Washington. Bonnie, as always, thanks so much.
Thank you.
These are among some of the top Asia stories currently trending on VOAnews.com. China at a quandary with U.S. tech firms amid trade dispute. A report says key unofficial bishop in Vatican-China deal detained. Vietnam briefly detains dissident singer after European tour. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. You'll also find a whole lot on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. China is merging its state-run television and radio outreach into a single entity called the Voice of China. The notice was published by the Xinhua News Agency last Wednesday, March 21st. President Xi Jinping said the world needs a better understanding of China. The plan brings together China Central Television, China Radio International, and China National Radio. Some Western media outlets call it one of the world's largest propaganda machines designed to strengthen the ruling Communist Party's ability to shape public opinion and project China's image to the world. Grant Newsham, senior research fellow at the Japan Forum for Strategic Studies in Tokyo, tells VOA's Victor Beatty the new outlet will build on the success of China's global media outreach.
They've done a very good job already in having things like the China Daily inserted into prominent American newspapers. The Chinese TV broadcast networks overseas that you see in hotels and on the networks present really what appear to be professional news and stories about what's going on in China. And plus, the Chinese have been very good at doing what are called united front operations, which find sympathetic people in target countries and get them to cooperate really with Chinese propaganda efforts. And the sympathy can sometimes be just based on genuine sympathy. And usually there's a financial angle or some sort of benefit that somebody wants. That could be a consulting fee, contribution to a think tank, or even just a visa. But at the end of the day, I think that it's worth considering that weighing President Xi's comments from the standards of how is a foreign reporter able to operate in China. He talks about spreading the word overseas, but foreign reporters, particularly Western ones who are based in China, often have a hard time getting visas. They are often harassed by the secret police. What they write is carefully monitored, and if they write the wrong things, they are subject to more harassment and pressure. Targets like the events in Xinjiang involving the Uyghurs, that's off limits. Very difficult and even dangerous to get out and cover that. Tibet is another place where you can't cover. Oppression of Falun Gong, also the Christian churches. But you do have to give them credit for having put together an effective propaganda arm, and of it, you know, part of it is radio broadcast, TV broadcast, and even print media overseas.
Well, Grant, China has spent billions, as you know, on propaganda as part of a decade-long soft power push. Still, the majority of people in countries like Japan, Germany, Italy view China negatively, according to a 2017 survey.
But there are also, you know, many people who do not, and particularly in areas where the Chinese have targeted specifically, and I would cite academia and really the think tank business as well, and even trying to influence politicians. The Confucius Institutes, which operate in the United States and globally, have gotten recent attention for being, let's say, propaganda arms of the really oppressive Chinese Communist Party. But they have managed to insinuate themselves very successfully at very many prominent universities, particularly in the United States.
Grant Newsham said China wants to explain itself as it wants people to see it, but is not open to scrutiny. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Thanks for listening. Extremely rare Chinese musical instruments and works of art dating from 9,000 years ago are on display for the first time in the United States. The archaeological treasures, mostly found in tombs in central China, give viewers a glimpse of the musical life of the ancient societies. VOA's Jun So takes us to the exhibit at the Musical Instrument Museum in Phoenix, Arizona.
This bianchong, meaning ordered bells, greets visitors at the entrance of the special exhibition in the Musical Instrument Museum. The approximately 2,600-year-old bronze bells were excavated from the tomb of a duke.
So this set of bells has 24 bells that are tuned to be part of a ritual ensemble from one of the courts during the spring and autumn period in the kingdom of Zheng for their special kind of music that they call Zhengsheng.
The exhibition is a collaboration between the museum in Phoenix and the Henan Museum in China's Henan province. The collection of more than 60 unique and historic instruments, none of which has ever been on display in the U.S., illustrates the entire breadth of the history of music in central China.
It begins with a bone flute from one of China's earliest Neolithic cultures in central China that's nearly 9,000 years old. Archaeologists have found a number of flutes made from bird bones in Pelagon burials, and these are collectively the oldest instruments in all of China.
Visitors can also hear and feel the harmony of the ancient instruments on display through the museum's multimedia technology, which features performances by the Henan Museum's orchestra using replicas. For producer Jun So in Phoenix, Arizona, I'm Carol Pearson, VOA News.
Coming up, a new healthy plastic. You're listening to VOA Asia. This news from VOA Asia. Once again, the region's aviation hubs are leading the world when it comes to passenger satisfaction, scooping top prizes in the prestigious annual Skytrax World Airport Awards. Maintaining its position at the top of that chart for an amazing sixth year in a row is Singapore's Changi Airport. Visit VOA Asia Facebook, which welcomes your arrival 24 hours a day, every day. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, researchers have developed daylight-powered microbe-killing masks and suits that may someday help protect health workers from deadly germs like Ebola. The same material could find its way into food packaging as well, helping cut down on foodborne diseases. VOA's Steve Barragona sheds more light on this potential help.
Frontline health workers wear protective gear to shield themselves during outbreaks of deadly diseases. Think of the white-suited workers during the West African Ebola outbreak in 2014. But that gear gets contaminated and poses a health risk. Gang Sun at the University of California at Davis and colleagues have developed plastic sheets that produce a tiny bit of disinfecting hydrogen peroxide when exposed to daylight. It's enough to kill germs, he says. Rohan Tekaker at the University of Maryland says others have developed materials that produce disinfecting chemicals, but most only work under high-energy ultraviolet light.
The unique aspect of this study is that it is not using the high-intensity UV light. It is using the sunlight. And the chemistry that they have chosen allows for some of that energy to be stored.
That way, it can still kill germs in the dark. Sun explains it acts like a battery.
But this battery is not producing electricity. Rather, that it produces hydrogen peroxide on the surface of your material.
If the new plastic makes its way into commercial production, it could not only save health workers, it could also save your vegetables. The research is published in the journal Science Advances. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Some of you have been listening on the radio, like at PSU Radio, Patani FM 107.25, Prince of Songkla University in Thailand. Thanks to everyone who joined us today. Our thanks to our renowned director, Tracy Carter, and our world-class engineer, Zainab Abdel-Rahman, as well as our VOA Asia team, including Skylar Ogden, David Bird, and Ira Melman. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a terrific day.